Blog Talk Radio.
If it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America here on PWTorchDailyCast.com. Good Sunday evening. I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks, and we are coming to you after the conclusion of Clash of Champions pay-per-view that WWE has put on here Sunday night, September 15th, 2019. We're going to take phone calls. We're going to take emails. We're going to hear from you about your thoughts on Clash of Champions here tonight. Really looking forward to seeing what everybody thought of this show. If you want to call in, the number is 515-605-9345. Press 1 if you'd like to talk. If you just want to call in and listen, that's fine too. If the lateness of the hour is getting to you, WNIALivecast@gmail.com is where you can send your emails, WNIALivecast@gmail.com. I'll be monitoring our email throughout the show. So if you do want to send one in, by all means, we'd love to hear from you. Tonight's show started with the pre-show. Cruiserweight Championship match. Saw Drew Gulak successfully defend the Cruiserweight Championship, defeating Humberto Carrillo and Lince Dorado. I had Carrillo winning this one, but I understand Gulak winning. He's done a nice job in that Cruiserweight Champion role. So I don't fault WWE for keeping the belt on Gulak. He brings a unique presence to the Cruiserweight division that I think is valuable. I just thought maybe Carrillo had some momentum behind him. They might want to change the titles going into a new era, whatever that may be, of 205 Live once SmackDown goes to Friday nights on Fox coming up soon. So we'll see what WWE does with their Cruiserweight title there. The other pre-show match was AJ Styles defending the Universal Championship against Cedric Alexander. And the match was, I think this was probably a disappointment for a lot of people. I don't know that there were a lot of disappointments on this show. I thought, on the whole, it was a largely average show. But I think this was probably a disappointment, not only going on in the pre-show, but getting very limited time. And AJ Styles getting the victory over Cedric Alexander in a short match. There was also a post-match beatdown with the club on Cedric Alexander. So the push for Alexander hits a bump in the road here. You know, just getting a United States title shot against AJ Styles, I think, is a step up from where he was a couple months ago when he was chasing around R-Truth in the 24/7 title. I didn't really think he was going to win this match, but I think people would have liked to have seen it be a little more competitive and set something up for down the line for Cedric Alexander. I don't think this match really did that. The Clash of Champions show proper began with the Raw Tag Team titles being defended by Braun Strowman and Seth Rollins. They defended against Bobby Roode and Dolph Ziggler. Roode and Ziggler win the Raw Tag Team titles in this match. There was a moment late in the match, Braun Strowman had hit Dolph Ziggler. Ziggler ran into Seth Rollins, and it was Bobby Roode who ended up pinning Seth Rollins. So the champion gets pinned here, and if you know WWE's way of 50-50 booking, that made it highly likely Seth Rollins was going to retain the Universal title against Braun Strowman by virtue of him taking the pinfall here. As odd as that may sound to people who aren't conditioned by WWE's booking. But so Bobby Roode and Dolph Ziggler are your new Raw Tag Team Champions. You know, you hate to get too much into the fantasy booking as far as where do these guys go after they win the titles, and that's up and down this card with the announcement earlier today that WWE would be doing a draft on October 11th SmackDown, as well as the October 14th Monday Night Raw. So that's coming less than a month away. So, you know, certainly for the next month and leading up to Hell in a Cell, you'd probably need a feud there. But it's hard to think long term at this point, you know, when you do have that draft coming up. Match number two was Bayley defending the SmackDown Women's Championship against Charlotte in Charlotte, North Carolina, by the way. So Charlotte was the babyface here, and apparently she's also the babyface on screen, although you'd never really know it the way she's been booked. But this was kind of an awkward, you know, it was awkward, I think, for more so for fans at home. For fans in the arena, obviously it was Charlotte all the way as far as who they favored. But Charlotte coming off a strong heel run, still showing some heel tendencies on TV, even though she's been beaten down. Then you have Bayley, who just recently turned heel. So for the fans watching at home, there may have been a difficult decision here about who to support. Bayley ended up getting the victory over Charlotte. This was another really quick match. Bayley, unbeknownst to the referee, and Charlotte undid the bottom turnbuckle pad and sent Charlotte headfirst into it, ended up getting a pin off of that, sprinted from ringside and to backstage. So I'm not sure what to read into this as far as the match being so short, other than with 9 matches on the main card and 11 matches total, if they wanted to get it done in a reasonable amount of time, and they got the main show done in about 3.5 hours, a little less than that, which is, I think, pretty reasonable for this day and age. Some of the matches would have had to go short, and I think there were some matches on this show that could have gone short to give more time to Bayley versus Charlotte. This may have been, given the finish, just the match number one in a line of them. So we could be looking at more Bayley and Charlotte down the line. Match number three was the Revival winning the SmackDown tag titles from the New Day. So both sets of men's tag team titles change hands on this show. It was a trailer hitch submission. Xavier Woods submitted to Scott Dawson here in this match. Revival getting the victory over the New Day. You know, pretty decent match. I think this is more of a traditional tag team title match than what we saw in the opener with Rude and Ziggler defeating Braun Strowman and Seth Rollins. Also, kind of interesting, maybe just to me, but you had both tag team matches, men's tag team title matches going on in the first hour, which I think is somewhat unusual for WWE. They like to spread out to similar matches a little more than that. Match number four was the women's tag team title match, so that followed directly behind the Revival defeating New Day, and this was Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross retaining the WWE Women's Tag Team titles over Fire and Desire, Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville. Maybe the surprise match of the show. This was a really solid match. They got some significant time in this one. It was briefly interrupted by the 24/7 shenanigans. Alexa Bliss actually tried to roll up R-Truth and pin him. Unsuccessfully, by the way, in the middle of her own tag team title match. But, you know, this was... they all showed well, and it's not always the case. You know, Mandy Rose, still kind of green. Alexa Bliss is very hit or miss with her matches, kind of depends on her opponent sometimes. But this one held together very well for a long-ish match for these two teams. So that was good to see. Match number five was the Intercontinental Championship being on the line, where Shinsuke Nakamura retained the IC title, defeating The Miz. Sami Zayn was at ringside, working the mic early on in the match, did not come into play as much later on. He did not stay on the mic for long, in other words. But he did get involved later on when Miz had a visual pin on Shinsuke Nakamura. Zayn got involved and stuck his nose in the match, and that led indirectly to Nakamura getting the victory later on over at The Miz. So Miz does have an argument that he may want a rematch here. We'll have to see where that goes. Match number six was arguably the match of the night here. I think it was Sasha Banks defeating Becky Lynch for the Raw Women's Championship, but it was only by disqualification. So Banks did not win the title here. It was a really good match. Went to various parts of the building here. Crowd was as invested as they were most of the night. I think the crowd was not as into the show as WWE might hope. So this was a good sign for Banks and Becky that this was the match that they were very clearly into. And I think this was the match that a lot of people were anticipating coming into this show, with Banks coming back from her hiatus, Becky Lynch, what would be the situation here as far as WWE? Because, nobody likes disqualification finishes. Nobody likes finishes that are unsatisfying. But from WWE's point of view, I thought the disqualification finish or the non-finish made sense here. And you can quibble about how they go about it, whether it's a no contest, how they go about the DQ. Those are all arguments worth having. But I think the fact that it was a disputed finish, a non-clean finish, I think made the most sense here. You got Sasha Banks coming back in a very strong position. I don't think you want to beat her in her first major match out. And then you got Becky Lynch, who WWE is trying to push as a crossover star, this person who is front and center in their SmackDown Live advertising on Fox, who's appeared on the cover of ESPN the magazine, who's been in ESPN This Is Sports Center commercials, very prestigious commercials for athletes. So, I didn't really see her losing the title heading into SmackDown on Fox, so this wonky finish made the most sense, as unsatisfying as it may have been for a lot of people. The WWE title was on the line next when Kofi Kingston defeated Randy Orton, retaining his WWE title. I think we need to talk about Kofi Kingston's championship run here as far as the crowd reactions to it, because he did not get much of a reaction coming out tonight. And granted, as I said, the crowd was hit or miss for a lot of the night. Much of it, you could argue, was a miss. But this is becoming too often a thing with Kofi, not just on TV, but on pay-per-view, where his reactions from the live crowd, I don't think, are where they should be for a WWE champion, a long-term WWE champion. Part of the trouble is, the crowd, as silly as this sounds, the crowd had already heard the New Day theme earlier in the show. So when you hear the theme throughout the show, it lessens the pop as you go along. I think that's a valid argument to make. And then you have to look at his opponents. And Randy Orton here, I think on paper, it made sense to have Orton challenge Kofi with their history together, with Orton being a pretty strong heel. And you'd like to see Kofi come out of this a lot stronger. I don't know that he has. I don't know that he has come out of this stronger. The crowd reaction tonight says differently. But, this was a long match. I think this was a good match. But I don't think it did anything to really get people excited about Kofi Kingston or Randy Orton, for that matter. I don't know where they go from here. I don't know if they go another month here at Hell in a Cell. There wasn't really anything in this match that led me to believe that would be the case. But Hell in a Cell is also not really where you want to start a feud necessarily, unless you're the Fiend. And we'll get to that momentarily. But I think we do have to have a discussion about what Kofi Kingston, where he is as champion, and, maybe where he should be. So I hate to say that, because I'm really behind Kofi and his title run. I think he's a great ambassador for WWE. I think he's a fine champion, but whether it's his opponents like Orton and others before him, whether it's, the fans having been conditioned to see Kofi for a decade as a mid-carder and having trouble seeing him as a main title holder, I don't know what the answer is. But I know that in my mind, Kofi's not where I expected him to be crowd support-wise and just overall, I think, as a product, where I thought he'd be this far into his WWE title run. But that's something to discuss for sure. And if you want to discuss that, 515-605-9345 is the number to call. Our phone lines are open, by the way. If you want to talk, press 1 on your keypad. If you want to just hang on the line and listen, you can go ahead and do that now as well. But again, if you want to talk, go ahead and press 1. Love to hear from you. The next match was Eric Rowan versus Roman Reigns. No disqualification match. This was a match that I thought was going to be very short, guys throwing bombs at each other, get in, get out type of thing, with Reigns getting the victory. WWE went in a different direction. They made it longer. This was a brawl around the building. I thought it was an okay match. The big news happened at the end. Luke Harper made his return, helping Rowan get the victory over Roman Reigns. So Reigns has taken some pretty significant high-profile losses. He lost to Shane McMahon. He loses to Rowan here. So you can read this as Rowan getting a big push as a singles. But then again, you know, you've got Harper returning in. It looks like he and Rowan are on the same page again. So do they reunite the Bludgeon Brothers as a team? So, you know, I think this is a match you could rematch at Hell in a Cell as a way to keep Harper out of there, as a way for Reigns to get Rowan one-on-one. But, you know, Reigns losing again here. And Rowan. I mean, I already talked about Rowan, and, you know, this seems to signal that WWE has big plans for him. We shall see. You know, does he end up in a spot against Kofi Kingston? That seems really early to me, even though Rowan's coming off a very big win here. But and then the other question you have to ask yourself is, where does Daniel Bryan fit in? We didn't see Daniel Bryan make an appearance at all here. Instead, it was Harper. Does Bryan team with Roman Reigns against Harper and Rowan at some point? Does Bryan find another partner to take on Harper and Rowan? Has Bryan moved on from this? Does he, you know, it seemed like he turned babyface when Rowan attacked him, but does he somehow stay heel and just go in a different direction? So lot to talk about coming out of that match as well, in addition to just the, you know, the overall match quality. So kind of interesting there. Seth Rollins, the main event, defeating Braun Strowman to retain the Universal Championship. And it was the Brock Lesnar special finish for when Brock Lesnar loses, where the babyface just throws everything but the kitchen sink at Lesnar and eventually keeps him down long enough to pin him. And that was the case here. You had Rollins giving curb stomp after curb stomp to Braun Strowman, and it couldn't keep him down. Finally giving the pedigree and then another curb stomp. That kept him down. Just as WWE was exiting and the copyright logo was on the screen for Clash of Champions, the arena went dark. The Fiend came out, gave the mandible claw to Seth Rollins. The Fiend, we know from previous weeks, has staked a claim to the Universal Championship at Hell in a Cell. That's been the advertising that's been out for that arena. It looks like that's the direction they're going in. So it'll be interesting to see how they do that, because I'm kind of torn on this. When you've got a star the caliber of The Fiend, who is obviously as over as he is as that character, you know, I think it's wise to take advantage of it, you know? And so, sure, put him in the main event. Put him in a Universal Championship match. The counter argument to that is the Fiend character is not one that really needs, in my opinion, a title. The Fiend's character is not one that should care about titles. I don't see him as a character that should put titles front and center. He's about, I don't want to say more than that, because I don't want to diminish the Universal title, but he's about something different. And, you know, that I think should be where he starts out. You know, I think starting him out, and this isn't the start because he's had one previous match, but really, I mean, basically he's starting out in this position where he's challenging Seth Rollins for the Universal title. That basically tells you there's nowhere to go but down from there if he didn't win the title. So it's almost like he has to win the title here. It's kind of like Sasha Banks returning. You know, Sasha Banks either had to win the title or they had to do a screw finish. You don't want to job her out in her first match back. And that's kind of the same thing with Bray Wyatt and The Fiend. You know, that character is almost transcending a championship feud, and they're putting him instead right into the Universal title picture. So that to me is an interesting move. Not one that I would necessarily make, but we'll have to see how it goes. So hoping that it works and that it's not a mistake, because I think, you know, they have something here with The Fiend, and it's a tough character, I think, to pull off, but WWE is going to give it the old college try. So it's gotten over. I mean, the other side of it is, too, Seth Rollins is this strong babyface, and you've got The Fiend, who is not a babyface character, but he gets the babyface pops because fans like to see something different. And there's nothing like this Fiend character on WWE's roster, period. So Rollins is the babyface who's fighting this dark spirit, this evil in the Fiend, and then fans are going to cheer the Fiend. So, you know, that's the difficulty also with booking this, but I don't think it would have made a difference if you did it now versus 6 months from now. I think the fans are going to cheer. There's nothing that Wyatt or the Fiend can do to really elicit boos. So I don't think that I don't think rushing into it now is going to lessen that that reaction at all. So I don't know. We'll have to see in another month or so if this was the right decision to put Wyatt in this situation here. 515-605-9345 is the number to call. Still nobody wanting to talk, apparently, which is making me think that there's something broken on my dashboard that's not showing me people that want to talk. But, you know, if you want to, make sure to press 1. Otherwise, this is going to be a really short show. So I've got somebody on now, and I'll get to them in just a second. I do want to read off. AAA had a big show today at the Hulu Theater in New York City. In Madison Square Garden, not Madison Square Garden where WWE runs, but the smaller Hulu Theater, just to go over some of those results. The main event saw Dr. Wagner Jr. defeat Blue Demon Jr. in a no DQ match. Kane Velasquez wrestled again, teaming with Brian Cage and Psycho Clown, defeating Rey Escorpión, Tejano Jr. and Taurus. The Lucha Brothers defeated Ortiz and Santana of LAX for the AAA World Tag Team Championship. Taya defeated Tessa Blanchard in a singles match for the AAA Reina de Reyes Championship, as some of the biggest matches on that show, a big show for AAA in New York City. So thank you, 309, for saving me and for proving that there's nothing broken on the dashboard here on Blog Talk Radio. So 309, you are on the show. Please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, this is Mike from thecommonmancave.com. How are you doing tonight, sir?
Doing great, Mike. Thanks for calling. And what did you think of Clash of Champions tonight?
Well, it was a show that I thought could have been better. I think a lot of the stories bringing us up to it were half-baked. A couple things came through. I have to admit, probably the highlight of the night for me was to see Luke Harper actually get used. He's a Bruiser Brody light type of wrestler, big guy who can move. And I don't know about you, but I was really happy to see him back.
Yeah, I think he adds another dimension to things, and he's a guy who I think, you know, add him to the list, underutilized guys in WWE for the last several months of his run. I like the tag team with Rowan as the Bludgeon Brothers, but WWE only gets into tag teams so much, so there's a certain ceiling to him as a tag team wrestler. I think with his size and with his unique ability, I think he brings something different to the table. So I think that's why I'm interested to see how he fits in here with Rowan. You know, do they go back into that Bludgeon Brothers tag team, or does he stake out on his own? If Rowan's in for a big push, which it looks like with the win over Roman Reigns, does Harper go his separate ways with the draft that's coming up next month? You know, does one go to SmackDown, one go to Raw, and they try to carve out their own path?
Yeah, I think it's interesting. It really depends, from my standpoint, on whether McMahon is actually going to book SmackDown and Raw, or if he's going to leave that to Bischoff and Heyman. If he leaves it to Bischoff and Heyman, I think Harper and Rowan have a chance. If McMahon just appointed them and he's still going to tear up scripts, you know, come October when the new world hits, then I think those two will probably end up where they have been, because the past is the best predictor of the future. A couple other things popped out to me. I really was, I thought Sasha would get the belt tonight. I'm not certain where they're going to head. If they want to have Becky on SmackDown, then one would have thought tonight would have been a good night to win it. I'm not certain, given Becky's character, if you want her to lose a Hell in the Cell match, but I guess Triple H lost plenty of those as well, so maybe it wouldn't be a big deal for her to lose that match. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, we can pretty easily presume Banks gets a rematch for the Raw Women's title at Hell in a Cell. And yeah, that's going to be interesting, because I think we're going to be able to read into what brands they go on based on the finish there. You know, if Becky wins, you know, she stays on Raw, and you know, do they have Charlotte stay on SmackDown as the top women's star there? Do they put Banks on SmackDown to be the top women's star there and share that spotlight maybe with Charlotte? Banks is the heel, Charlotte is the babyface. If Banks wins, you know, it looks like she would go to Raw. Becky would then go to SmackDown and be the top women's star on SmackDown, which a lot of the advertising for Fox and SmackDown on Fox has featured Becky Lynch. So that could be the case. If Banks wins at Hell in a Cell, Becky ends up moving over to SmackDown. And, you know, maybe Banks goes to Raw and either Bayley or Charlotte goes to Raw with Banks. I think, you know, to me, the top four are Charlotte, Bayley, Banks, and Lynch. So ideally you split it and have two on each brand. Now, whether or not WWE does that, I don't know. Especially with Raw being 3 hours, SmackDown still being 2 hours. Do they keep an extra one? Do they go 3-1 with three on Raw and one on SmackDown, knowing they have an extra hour to fill on Raw? So that'll be interesting, especially because this is supposed to be a hard split now. So there's going to be no more wild card rule. There's going to be no more random appearances from one brand to the other. And it's going to be a harder split. So I think that's, you know, that makes things a little more interesting as well.
Yeah, and the X factor there is, what do they do with Ronda Rousey? Her rumored coming back, you know, do you end up having, you know, Lynch and Rousey on one and the rest on the other? I think that's going to be interesting to see what choices they make there.
Right, and I don't know what the reporting is on Ronda, but I don't think if she comes back, I don't think it's going to be full time. So she may come back, you know, maybe month or two here to challenge for a title or to have a grudge match or whatever like that. So that may be a little less consequential as to what brand she's on if she only comes back for a short time.
Yeah, she may be the female equivalent of Brock Lesnar. Should be interesting. I actually am one of the few people. I actually like both Bobby Roode and Dolph Ziggler. So if and I say that if, you know, with total laughability to it.
You're one of a single digit number of people who likes both of those guys. I think
I'm totally with you. I get it. But you know, if they were allowed to do something, I think those two guys could be pretty entertaining. You know, the old beer money days of Rude, why you would give somebody a Nature Boy style gimmick and then make him a good guy when he shows up in the WWE was just beyond me. He was a fantastic Ric Flair light bad guy. And they should have kept him that way. So maybe it'll be something good. Although, since they're the tag team champions, we may not hear from them until WrestleMania. Who never knows?
Yeah, that's right. And I think you do bring up a good point that Bobby Roode's greatest success in his career has come as a part of a tag team. So yep. I don't hate the idea of Roode in a tag team. I just don't know. I haven't seen enough, I guess, of them and their chemistry to say whether or not it'll work. You know, first blush, they don't seem to have a lot of chemistry together. But then again, WWE hasn't had them do anything to show off their chemistry. You know, they've not really been involved in a lot of backstage segments. They've not really been able to play off each other all that much. since they've been put together. So maybe we'll get that now that they're champions and they'll be able to establish some of that. But yeah, I don't, and you know what, it takes advantage of Roode and it takes advantage of Ziggler, and it unclutters that mid-card singles division a little bit by putting these two together as a tag team, which is not a bad thing. I'm never going to hate on the idea of taking two directionless mid-carders and putting them together as a tag team and doing something significant with them, which is what WWE has done with Roode and Ziggler here.
Yep, I totally agree. And I guess the last thing, I've got two more points. But the last one with tonight's Clash of Champions is, while I really enjoy the idea of Seth Rollins versus The Fiend, if The Fiend loses this, what is going to be presumed to be a Hell in a Cell match, then he's just turned himself back into Bray Wyatt, and I'm not certain what the whole point of doing that is. But then again, I didn't understand the point of getting Braun Strowman and Seth Rollins up against each other in Clash of Champions in the first place. So obviously some of this stuff is going over the top of my head. Your thoughts?
Well, yeah, and I kind of touched on this when I talked about, you know, The Fiend attacking at the end of the show is, you know, I went through the scenarios and the risks of The Fiend losing. And I think you hit on it. The Fiend, so much of his mystique is around this aura of his that, you know, transcends the ring, so to speak. So if you treat him as just another wrestler who's winning and losing like everybody else, then I think he loses a lot of that aura. While we also have to understand that you can't go on an undefeated streak forever, I think the best thing to do would have The Fiend go on a pretty substantial winning streak, and that would include winning the title from Seth Rollins at Hell in a Cell. I think that brings up all kinds of different storyline possibilities. You know, we've never really had somebody, you know, maybe The Undertaker back in, what was it, 92 or whatever, when he briefly won the title while he was the Dead Man. But we've never had a character like The Fiend holding the main title of a brand. And so much of WWE nowadays, more so than even when Undertaker had the title, is about the champion representing the company and sort of being the locker room leader and that sort of thing. And so when The Fiend becomes champion, how does that change things? Like, how do, you know, the announcers always talk about being the face of the company and that's the role of being the champion. All of a sudden, if you have that face being the face of the Raw brand with as a Universal Champion, I think there are some stories you could tell there with, things going a little darker on Monday Night Raw because of The Fiend as champion and people being very careful and walking around on eggshells and not wanting to anger the champion. It just small changes, like it doesn't have to be a wholesale change as to how you present the product or anything like that. But, you know, I think that is a point worth making if you're going to make him champion.
Certainly makes for some interesting Make-A-Wish Foundation commercials. I'll say that much to watch the kids cowering as he comes into the,
no
comes
doubt
into
about
the
it.
Ward. And then the last thing, which is non-Clash of Champions, but we will probably see something potentially even as soon as Wednesday night. But I will have to say that as somebody who always has one or two wrestlers that end up being my favorite in every promotion, Kevin Owens, what they've done to his character in 6 weeks has to be the biggest deconstruction that I've ever seen. And, you know, we always say that you have to give him a chance to get to the end of the plan so you see what the payoff is. But I'm telling you right now, as I look through as a wrestling fan who's 52 years old, who started off with watching a lot of AWA with Nick Bockwinkle and that era, I don't know that I've ever seen a character lose their credibility as both a face and a heel the way Owens has been written. And I think it's a real shame because I think he's probably, when you add what he can do in the ring with what he can do on the microphone, I think he's probably the top guy in WWE. Now, the look probably will never make him be the number one guy, but in terms of his skill sets, I think he is the best they've got. And seeing what they've done to his character, I have no idea how they bring him back from this. And that's just a final, you know, kind of thought I was having as this whole thing went on tonight.
Sure. And I think that's a fair question. Kevin Owens not on the show tonight. Shane McMahon, who he's been feuding with, not on this show tonight. I think the type of thing they're doing with Kevin Owens can work in the short term. But this is a story where the longer you drag it out, the less satisfying the obvious conclusion is going to be. And we assume that Kevin Owens is somehow going to show that his pandering to Shane was all a ruse at some point, and you know he's going to get one over on Shane, whether that's beating him in a match to get his job back or something like that, or you know, to show that he was insincere when he was basically begging Shane to keep his job. And that's something that can work in the short term, but the longer you do it and the longer you have to sit through this babyface cowering under the powerful thumb of a McMahon family member, I think the less satisfying and the less worth it that conclusion is going to be, even if it is the obvious one. So I do think it's hurt Kevin Owens significantly. We'll see just how much it did hurt him when he inevitably does come back, as he said, as early as this week, perhaps, depending on what happens. I know there's some rumblings that he may end up going to NXT and doing something there. And I know there's a lot of fans who won't see that as a demotion, but there are some fans that probably will. And it's going to be really interesting because he would be the biggest star from the main roster to go back to NXT, even semi-permanently. You know, let's say this lasts maybe 3 weeks to a month before he somehow gets his job back on Raw or SmackDown. You know, that would still be, for someone of that caliber, a major jump. So, yeah, I have no answers. I think if you look at the Kevin Owens storyline and you're frustrated with it, I can completely understand it, even if you're someone who's seen this play out in wrestling before and probably know what the ending is going to be. It's still not a fun ride to get there.
Yeah, and I don't have a lot of faith in recent booking by Vince McMahon that he'll get there at all, let alone do it in an organized fashion. Well, anyway, I'm taking enough of your time tonight, sir, but I appreciate you having me on, and thank you for the show. Yep. It's always a good listen. That's what I listen to on my drive time on Monday morning.
Absolutely. Thanks for calling in, Mike. Appreciate it.
Take care, sir. Bye-bye.
So Mike has called in and offered his thoughts on Clash of Champions. There is nobody waiting on the line. So if you want to call in, 515-605-9345, to give your thoughts on Clash of Champions, make sure to press 1 so you show up in the queue as wanting to talk. The King of the Ring finals was at one point slated for Clash of Champions tonight. It did not take place. During the show, they advertised that King of the Ring finals would end up tomorrow night on Monday Night Raw. So it'll be Baron Corbin, Chad Gable tomorrow night on Monday Night Raw in the finals. I don't know how to read into that. I don't know if that's more or less likely to have Chad Gable win versus Baron Corbin that it's on Raw versus pay-per-view. I'm not sure how to read that, but that is one of the matches scheduled for Monday Night Raw this Wednesday night. WWE and NXT goes live on the USA Network in its new time slot. 1 hour on USA. It's going to be 1 hour on the WWE Network. And big match to start things out. It will be, I believe, Roderick Strong versus Velveteen Dream this coming Wednesday on the USA Network. I believe that is the big show, the big match that they are advertising for Wednesday, yes, for the North American Championship. Also on Wednesday, we have Matt Riddle and Killian Dane facing off in a street fight. That will be on the WWE Network, the second hour of NXT's premiere on USA. And we'll also have a fatal four-way to determine Shayna Baszler's next challenger for the NXT Women's Championship. Involved in that match will be Mia Yim, Candice LeRae, Io Shirai, and Bianca Belair. 516, You are on the air on Wrestling Night in America. Please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, guys. It's Jason from Long Island. Hope all is well.
Absolutely is. Jason, good to hear from you. What did you think of Clash of Champions tonight?
Overall, I thought it was a pretty nice card. You know, it wasn't too bad. But, you know, looking forward at the next pay-per-view, Hell in a Cell, I wanted your thoughts. What matches, you know, from this pay-per-view do you think will lead into the Cell?
I think we'll get the Fiend versus Seth Rollins based on the post-match attack there. And, you know, I talked with Mike in the last call about the pitfalls of doing a title match with the Fiend so early on in his run. I think Sasha Banks versus Becky Lynch is a virtual lock to rematch at Hell in a Cell. It wouldn't surprise me if that was inside a cell, given the disqualification finish, given the way they maneuvered around the arena during their match. You know, Rowan and Reigns, I thought until the finish there was a possibility that that match could happen again at Hell in a Cell with Harper getting involved. That changes the dynamic a little bit, whether or not it's Harper and Rowan versus Reigns and a partner, or, you know, maybe Harper versus Reigns or something like that. I'm not sure. You would expect that Reigns would get his win back against Rowan, but, you know, I don't think he ever did against Shane McMahon. So that could be up in the air. But those are, and then you've got the rematches for the titles that were lost. I know they don't do automatic rematches now, so maybe this isn't as automatic as it used to be.
Right. Would you be upset if we saw Kevin Owens and Shane McMahon in the cell to finish that feud off?
I think we've seen it in a cell or in a steel cage recently. Didn't they do it at Hell in a Cell like a year or two ago? So I feel like that is, you know, I'm over Shane McMahon as a wrestler, and I know that the storyline is probably going to lead to another Kevin Owens versus Shane McMahon match, but I don't think it's really a Hell in a Cell gimmick right now. I think you've got the Fiend versus Rollins, and I think you've got Banks versus Lynch. I think those two are the big matches you want to do inside Hell in a Cell. Usually WWE has only done two or three Cell matches at the Hell in a Cell pay-per-views in recent history. So I don't know that Owens and Shane, to me, rises to the level of a Hell in a Cell match. And if Owens goes on to NXT on Wednesday night, I think it makes it a little more difficult to do Shane versus Kevin, because now they're on separate brands, and certainly, you know, they could interact in some way, but I just don't see it. I'm over Shane as a wrestler. I understand
I
that
really hope not
Shane
too.
Versus Owens will probably have to take place, but I hope that's not one of them that's inside the cell.
Perfect. Thank you guys for your time.
Absolutely. Thanks for calling in, Jason. Appreciate it. So that was Jason from Long Island. And if you want to get on the line, 515-605-9345 is the number. Email wnialivecast@gmail.com. Check the emails. Other than that, we've got a big week coming up. And every Sunday night, of course, you can catch us here on Wrestling Night in America. Most weeks we are on the 8 p.m. Eastern time for about 90 minutes. I usually have a co-host from the PW Torch family who joins me to talk about some of the big shows in professional wrestling. That's what we focus on here on Wrestling Night in America. And we'll have a guest next week previewing Hell in a Cell. It's 3 weeks. So it's coming up on us very quickly. No rest for the weary. And then, of course, once we get into October, we've got SmackDown going to Fox. We've got AEW starting on TNT. We've got all that good stuff. And this week we've got NXT on USA Network. So that'll be something we'll talk about next Sunday as well. Every Sunday that there is a WWE pay-per-view, we go on the air as we did tonight, right after that pay-per-view goes off the air, taking your phone calls, taking your emails about that show. So spending a lot of time here on Clash of Champions. And the next one, of course, is Hell in a Cell. We'll be live on the air after that show. And of course, you can email us anytime during the week. If you're watching Raw, SmackDown, NXT, and something pops into your head and you don't want to forget come Sunday, or you're not able to call in live on Sunday, you can email us and we get to, it's my promise, my solemn promise to you that if you email us, we will get to it on that show, wnialivecast@gmail.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Greg M. Parks as well. So we've run out of phone calls. We've run out of emails. We've talked about the Clash of Champions card. So this is the point where I sign off and thank you for listening for another Sunday. Don't forget to catch us again next Sunday, PWTorchDailyCast.com, because if it's Sunday, it's wrestling night in America.